Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, welcome back. No Willard, no Dibs on the January 2nd today. They'll be back coming up on Monday. They'll react to Niners Seahawks, which is tomorrow at 5 from Levi's Stadium on ESPN. It's the second game of a doubleheader tomorrow in the NFL. Panthers in Tampa Bay versus the Buccaneers, which bad team is going to make the postseason. That's what that game is. And then Niners and Seahawks, which team will win the NFC West and be the one seed in the NFC. That's the second game coming up tomorrow on ESPN. Then you got a full slate of Sunday football week 18. It is really sad, Sterling. Obviously, the postseason is an incredibly exciting time, and for Niner fans specifically, tomorrow is going to be incredible. It is really, really sad that 2 days from now, this Sunday, is the final like full Sunday of NFL that we're going to have all the way until we get to September next year. It is really sad how quickly the season always goes.
Well, I can tell you this, while we are both mourning the loss of the 2025 NFL season, my wife is jumping for joy because she gets her husband back. Now, thankfully, San Francisco's in the playoffs, so and hopefully they can keep this thing going for as long as possible. But yeah, she has been patiently waiting since about August for the season to end. But I tell her, honey, I ain't coming home just yet. We got a couple more weeks to go. So Niners, you can win the next month or so. We can have a lot more fun and hopefully maybe not keep my wife in agony, but keep her patiently waiting behind the scenes, because this team can go pretty far, and I think that this game on Saturday can be a big determining factor in that. But yes, you're right, Mark, for what is it, 16, 18 other fan bases, their season ends, and they look towards the draft in April, which is still a long, long ways away.
Yeah, I was going to say, Niners could be playing for another month or so, and then you just turn your attention right to draft prep, so I don't know when your wife is ever, you know, gonna get you back, but...
Such is life, Mark.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Niners, Seahawks tomorrow. Biggest game since the Super Bowl for the 49ers, and I don't think it's really all that close. You can take out anything that happened last year that came nowhere close. The Bears this past week was obviously a gigantic game for the Niners, but nothing comes close to a win, and you win the division, and you're the number one seed. The only thing that that beats that of late is that Super Bowl of a couple of years ago. So we'll see what happens. We're going to talk about it. Let's break down this matchup coming up in a sec, but first let's go out to the phone lines, and if you want to weigh in anything Niner-related, feel free to do so. This is for you guys. 888-957-9570. Robert is in Dublin and wants to talk about Niners and Seahawks. What's up, Robert? You're on Willard and Dibs. It's Sterling and Grandy in, though. Happy New Year. What's up, Robert?
Hey. Happy New Year, fellas. Just basically wanted to say, man, I think the Niners defense needs to be patient, keep them guys in front of you, and I'm going to close with D'Amador Lenore. Whatever you do, you need to back up whatever you talking that trash to that Smith and Jigba, young man. That dude is nice. So, hey, I look forward to it. Bang, bang, Niner gang, let's go. And quest for six, baby, let's do it at home. Y'all have a happy new year and take it easy.
Yes, sir. Appreciate that, Robert. Back at you. It's interesting that he brought up D'Amador Lenore and Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Sterling, because it's something that you and I were talking about when we're getting ready for the show. If we dive into a little bit of X's and O's for a little bit, it would make some sense initially when you look at it to have Demo just kind of follow Jaxon Smith-Njigba wherever he goes. And if you're mostly just a Niner fan and you don't watch a lot of other football, you might remember JSN, who hurt the Niners week one. He was really good. He's been even better the rest of the season. I think pretty clearly he's been the best receiver in football all season long. There's a couple of others that are up there with them. Puka Nacua of the Rams, and they're right here in this division as well. And some others, of course, as well, have been amazing. But JSN has burst onto the scene as one of, if not the best receiver in the NFL this season. And the Niners, as we talked about a little bit earlier, Sterling, are pretty inexperienced at cornerback, and they're inexperienced really everywhere defensively. The one guy that you trust and that you feel like is clearly an above-average starter in the NFL is D'Amador Lenore, but the one thing, Sterling, the Niners don't really do all that often is have a corner follow one single receiver over the course of an entire game. Normally, Demo chooses a side, and whoever's on that side is the guy that he guards on that play.
Well, I can't even think of the Niners doing that once this season, but on top of that, The last time I think San Francisco did have a cornerback shadow a wide receiver was against Seattle, but it was Charvarius Ward against DK Metcalf, yeah. And that worked out in their favor, and they won that game and won that series against the Seahawks in 2023. But you don't have that luxury of having a Lenore opposite Charvarius Ward or you know, whoever else was playing nickel at the time. I think it may have been one of their safeties, but you know, right now you have Renardo Green, who's in year two and been rather up and down. Upton Stout may or may not play because of a concussion. I think he's in the final stages of passing protocol, but if it's not him, it's Chase Lucas. And you have Darrell Luter Jr., and you have two safeties that are boom or bust, and a lot more bust in that than there is boom. And so you don't have the luxury of playing or allowing your top cornerback to shadow guys. You had, like, I'd rather have one side of the field locked down than one guy locked down, because it takes away a lot of what Darnold can do. But, you know, really, no matter how you shake things off and however you want to decide to scheme up against Seattle, you are putting your team in harm's way no matter what, which that is the unfortunate place San Francisco finds their defense in right now.
Yeah, and Robert Saleh was asked about this very thing. I know this wasn't exactly what Robert asked about. One, he was talking about Demo trash-talking, and he better back that up. Demo, he's got a loud mouth. In a lot of ways, it's a good thing. He has a lot of fun with it, but he's not shy, and he's an equal opportunity hater, as they say. Everybody can get it, and he's going to target the opposing team's best players, and certainly Jaxon Smith-Njigba fits that. If we're talking specifically, though, about if Lenore is going to follow JSN around, it, and this is what Robert Saleh had to say. Essentially, he said it's easy for Lenore because he just goes wherever that guy is. But it becomes more difficult for everybody else defensively. For example, let's say on a certain play or a handful of plays, Sterling, that JSN lines up in the slot. And Lenore is, he's shadowing him around. He just lines up in the slot. Where does that leave your slot corner, your nickel corner? Where does Upton Stout play? You feel comfortable putting him on the outside against someone like Rashid Shaheed or Torrey Horton or whoever the deep threat is for the Seahawks? Like, no, you don't feel good about that at all. So,
not a fan.
Robert Saleh did not say they're not going to do it. They're not going to tell opponents what their plan is defensively. I feel pretty confident, though, we're going to see Lenore do what he always does, which is you pick a side of the field. Whenever JSN is over there, you'll guard him. Whenever somebody else is over there, you'll guard him, because they want to keep their inexperienced, unproven, and relatively limited guys defensively in spots they're the most comfortable. And right now, that's Lenore on the outside, and it is as well, Upton Stout on the inside in the slot spot as the nickel corner. Other than that, it's just going to be kind of normal for the Niners, which maybe doesn't give you the most confidence, because normal for the Niners has been really bad of late. But I do think it is better than the alternative, which is putting guys in spots that they are not familiar or comfortable with at all.
Well, it's the age-old question of, do you change things for the sake of one game and changing things up, or do you keep an inexperienced defense in a situation in which they're comfortable at, knowing that if you remove them from a comfortable situation where they may feel more confident, you could have one of the worst games of the entire defense this season, which Chicago was certainly that. The Rams game, at Levi's, was that for sure, but you run the risk of, if you take this inexperienced secondary out of their comfort zone, you could be in for a 40-point performance for the Seahawks offense. And I love the Niners offense right now, but the odds are putting 40 points against Seattle's defense is pretty slim, knowing how good they're playing. So, again, it's kind of a catch-22. I get it. You want to have your best defensive player guard their best offensive player, but like you're saying, there's a massive risk in doing so, and Robert Saleh probably is better of not doing that, simply because they can't afford to have, you know, 36 points or 40 points put up against them, which has been a very high possibility for a lot of games this year.
Yeah, Niners' last two games, they've scored 90, so they're averaging 45 in their last two, but those defenses are Indiana and Chicago. Not that they're terrible defenses by any stretch, specifically Chicago. They give up a lot of yards, but they turn the ball over quite often. Seattle, though, is just flat out one of the best defenses in the NFL. Probably, I think, in most people's minds, the second best defense in the league behind D'Amico Ryan's Houston Texans. I think most people would say Houston number one and then Seattle number two. There's maybe a couple of other teams that you could include in that conversation, but this is a defense that across the board is really, really good, Sterling. And then specifically, when you look at how the Niners have fared versus this defense, and specifically how the quarterback Brock Purdy has fared versus this defense. You and I were talking about this earlier. think back to when Mike McDonald was the young defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens in 2023. That was his most recent job before taking the head coach of the Seahawks over last year. He's now in his second year as the head coach of the Seahawks. Year before was the DC of the Ravens. So last 2 years, Purdy versus the Seahawks and Purdy versus the Ravens in 2023, which was, of course, that infamous Christmas Day game where Brock threw four interceptions. And the Niners lost that game, and Purdy simultaneously lost the MVP. Brock Purdy in four games in his career versus Mike McDonald defenses. Three versus the Seahawks the last 2 years, and that one versus the Ravens a couple of years ago. Seven total touchdowns, one on the ground, six passing touchdowns, one on the ground, and seven interceptions. Seven touchdowns, seven interceptions for Brock Purdy versus Mike McDonald defenses in his career. That doesn't give you the most confidence about Brock going into this game.
When there's two games within those four that have multiple turnovers, including that four-interception game on Christmas, which that was a long day for your boy at the station, I'll tell you that. When it was Warriors in the morning and Niners at night, and I was filled with the Martinellis and we were having a good time, but you know, you're hoping tomorrow ends a little differently for San Francisco. But you're right. This is a defense that has historically given a Shanahan offense some fits. And while, yes, you can talk about Brock having a great game, and I think there's every reason to believe that he can come out of this game on top, and he's played good enough to have that much belief that he can take this team all the way if everything goes well for them. But you're playing a defense that has been somewhat of this offense's kryptonite in recent seasons. Even go back to last year against Seattle. Geno Smith walked off this team at home at Levi's Stadium, which, you know, the Niners were kind of in the playoff hunt there, but didn't belong in it by any means. But they've been a thorn in this offense's side, and this team has been frisky. They've, you know, there's been, you know, 17 weeks in between their last outings. They believe they're the better team, and rightfully so. Seattle, I think, is the better team of these two. Now, sometimes better teams don't always win games, but you know, this isn't just a test for Brock Purdy. This is equally a test for Kyle Shanahan too. Of like, can you overcome not just a division rival, but also can you overcome a defense that has given you fits and kind of made you look foolish at times as a play caller?
And this is also, I think, Kyle Shanahan at his best of late. Like, we're going to talk a lot about Brock Purdy, and we got a phone call to get to in just a sec. I see you, Gene. We're coming to you. We're going to talk a lot about Brock. We're also going to talk a bunch about Kyle Shanahan. And there was something that the guys in the midday, it was Evan and Bonte filling in for Steiny and Goo and doing a great job. Fun show to listen to. And I think it was Evan who brought up that he thought Kyle Shanahan was having as much fun as he ever has as head coach and play caller of the 49ers. And it got me thinking, like, there's something to be said, Sterling, for feeling challenged and feeling like not everything is kind of tailor-made for you, and you don't have the best roster, and you don't have all this crazy talent around you. Like, the argument has been made for all of Brock Purdy's career. Well, just wait until he doesn't have the Avengers around him, right? Well, guess what? What did he do last week? You don't have Debo. He was, of course, not on the team. You don't have Ayuk. Haven't had him all season. And this is the case for the entire season, but specifically the last couple of weeks, and even more specifically, last week versus Chicago, when they scored on almost every possession and scored 42 points, and they needed every single one of those points to win that game. But no Kittle, no Ayuk, no Debo, no Trent Williams. And what does Brock Purdy do? Puts together arguably the best game of his career with five total touchdowns and some really crazy high-level plays. The same, I think, could be said for Kyle Shanahan, who's at his best and maybe, to Evan's point, is having more fun than he's ever been before because he feels like he's having a bigger impact. Like, when the Niners had Debo at an all-pro level and Kittle at an all-pro level and Ayuk at an all-pro level and Trent was healthy playing left tackle and Brock was playing on the MVP level, and so was McCaffrey. Like, how much was really riding on Kyle Shanahan's creativity and play-calling decisions? Whereas it feels like right now, the Niners might win or lose a game because of one single Kyle Shanahan decision, and it feels like he loves that responsibility, and he loves having that much on the line, and that's what it's been for the last month.
The last couple years, and maybe excluding 2024, but 22 and 23... Not to say Shanahan wasn't challenged, because each game has its own wrinkles and stuff you need to kind of discover, but it almost felt like, not that he's coasting either, but his job was just so easy until playoff time came. where it's like, yeah, I can just play point guard. I can facilitate. I know my guys are going to be open. I know Debo's always my safety kind of outlet. And, you know, in kind of a way, it's like comparing Shanahan to a Jimmy Garoppolo as a quarterback of like, I don't need to do much because other guys can carry that load for me. And now Kyle's still great. And within that, there's still greatness and you can see it on display through those years. But this year, to me, Shanahan seems like the type of guy, the type of mind that really enjoys a challenge of, okay, my back's against the wall. My team can't afford to not score on the next five drives. What do we concoct in this mad scientist laboratory we have going out here in Santa Clara? And you've seen the last 6 weeks or so of like, if they had one slip up, if they lost a single game, we wouldn't be talking about, oh, biggest game of the year tomorrow. I'd be like, okay, are you playing for the fifth or sixth seed, right?
They might might think about resting players, honestly, tomorrow.
Right, and like that goes to prove, yeah, one, how great Purdy has been and how good his performance has been, but also the way Shanahan has conducted the offense, the schemes, the scripted plays, the non-scripted plays, without Pearsall, without Kittle at times, without Trent Williams. It's not just hindering him without the personnel he has or should have as his starters, but also, you know, to overcome missing pieces, to plug in DeMarcus Robinson and Kendrick Bourne, who was cut by the Patriots to begin the season, and you might get 600 yards in this offense. That's incredible. Like, the way Shanahan has played this year, it's almost like he has searched out the challenge and willfully accepted it, saying, I have to do this, because if we don't, and if I fail, this team equally fails too.
Yeah, and this whole conversation about maybe, you know, like a play caller, a head coach, a CEO type who feels happier, you know, the more pressure is on him when he has that responsibility and he knows everything is kind of riding on the decisions he makes. I always think back to something that Steve Kerr said years ago, and I'm sure you remember this, Sterling, but it was the year after Kevin Durant left the Warriors. So he went to the Nets. The Warriors got D'Angelo Russell in that sign-and-trade. Klay was out for the year after tearing his ACL. Steph got hurt early in the season and was out. And I think Draymond was in and out of the lineup, but it didn't really matter because the Warriors were terrible without KD, without Steph, without Klay. And they were so bad that they were out of the postseason early. Then the pandemic happened, but they were so bad even before that, it didn't even matter. And Steve Kerr was quoted saying something along the lines of, I've enjoyed coaching the team this season more than the last handful of years because of the challenge, essentially. Because when you trot out Steph and KD and Klay and Draymond and Iguodala and all these players every single game, it's like, what is there for the coach to even do? Right? Like, what do you do on a day in and day out basis other than managing egos and all of that? But like, from a basketball standpoint, what do you do? And that might be a little bit what Shanahan felt, say, back in 2023, when the team was the best team in football basically the entire season. And football basketball is different. Of course, there's a whole lot more game planning that goes into a single football game than a single basketball game. But this year for Shanahan might be similar to that post-KD season for Steve Kerr, where he feels like he has so much more of an impact on the team. And I feel like that's what's going on for the Niners this year as well. 888-957-9570. Gene is in Oakland and wants to weigh in. What's up, Gene? You're on Willard and Dibs, but no Willard or Dibs today. It's Sterling and Grandy with you. What do you got?
Hey, Happy New Year, guys.
You too.
So, so here's the deal. I mean, I'm not worried about the offense. I mean, not having Trent Williams potentially and most likely is an issue, but we didn't have him last week, really. He hurt himself in the first place. We will have Kittle, so we can't expect 42 points again, but I'm not worried about the offense. I am worried about the defense, as is everyone else. Specifically, we need to find a way, or Robert Saleh needs to find a way, to put pressure on Darnold. Okay? Darnold is a bigger, more experienced, and actually better quarterback, Taylor, except when he's under pressure. We want this guy to feel the pressure somehow so that he begins to see ghosts, because we know what happens when that happens. I don't know what it's going to take. You know, maybe he has to be really creative with some displays, packages, whatever. And I know they're reluctant to do that and leave the field open. But I really feel as though if you can really make this guy think or worry about pressure, you know, at some point during the game, he's going to make a mistake and or two, and that's how we're going to win.
Hmm. Interesting, Gene. Appreciate the call, and Happy New Year to you as well. I think that there is no doubt, Sterling, that if the 49ers are to win this game, a big part of it is going to be because their quarterback outplays the Seahawks quarterback. And I think that's likely the way that this game goes. Now, if that's enough to get the Niners the win, we will see. But, I mean, you just ask both fan bases and you get honest answers out of them. Who do you feel more comfortable and confident in going into this game, Brock Purdy or Sam Darnold? I think everybody would say Brock Purdy. I don't know how you couldn't at this point. I mean, these are quarterbacks that the way that they've been playing of late are kind of headed in opposite directions. Does not mean that Darnold is bad by any stretch. He's an above-average quarterback and has had a far above-average season, but the last half of the season has not been nearly as good as the first half of the season, and Brock Sterling is arguably playing the best football of his entire career.
You asked the big question there, right? Which quarterback do you trust more? And I think that's what this game comes down to. Obviously, there's more to it, you know, defenses and special teams, but, and you hate to chalk a game up to quarterbacks because so much more goes into it, but like, that really what this, you know, whoever scores more points wins, right? And the offenses and the quarterbacks are responsible for that. So, I think head and shoulders, almost every head coach, every offensive coordinator, every team probably would say, give me Brock Purdy over Sam Darnold. And I think whether that's because of the way both those quarterbacks are trending, Purdy having, what, 13 touchdowns in his last three games and only a handful of turnovers, and Sam Darnold having, what is it here, in his last seven games, he's 6-1, but he has 8 touchdowns and 10 turnovers.
Yep.
Like, that's not something you want to be showing on the field in December and leading into January. You don't want to be trending in the wrong direction, and I don't think it's crazy to say that San Francisco may have the hottest hand in football playing quarterback for them, and that is a hot knife through butter against any defense, no matter how good they are, and it takes a Herculean effort to beat quarterbacks. Like, go back to Mahomes when he's in his prime and he's healthy. He's unstoppable. Now, Brock Purdy is not Patrick Mahomes. We all know that, but the way he's playing, well, you know, Chris Collinsworth was out there choking like, oh my God, this guy might be Patrick Mahomes. Like, and that's how good he's been the last couple of weeks. And obviously Purdy has a you know, he'll turn the ball over too. But this is the best quarterback play they've gotten in 30 years, you know, out of these guys, whether it's Garcia, Garoppolo, Kaepernick, Smith, this is the best they've seen. And it's really hard to root against or vote against quarterbacks like this when they're on a heater, whether it's Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson. It's Brock Purdy right now, and he's playing the best of any quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, well, let's talk more about that on the other side, about this QB battle, because it's Brock Purdy versus Sam Darnold. There's a lot of familiarity there. Sam Darnold, by the way, gives Brock Purdy a lot of credit for why his career kind of turned around. Interesting. You're going to want to hear what he had to say almost a whole year ago about Brock. A whole lot more to dive into. Brock Purdy or Sam Darnold? You have more faith in Brock at this point, right? If you are a fan of these teams, you're taking Brock. And I don't think it's that close. 888-957-9570. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. And we're sponsored by the Inn at the Tides in Bodega Bay. Picture yourself in a cozy room by the fire, enjoying breathtaking views of Bodega Bay. This time of year is magical at the Inn at the Tides. Special midweek rates start at just $199 per night. Book your escape now, innatthetides.com. Time for a break. Willard and Dibs with Sterling and Grandy Inn. Back next on 95.7 The Game.